一度だけの恋なら君の中で遊ぼう、わがままなキスをしよ
う。 It's May 1st and the Speaker Podcast crew are here for another episode of Macross Telta. We are ger-talking it. It is currently 11:55 or so in the evening here in Tokyo. We've just finished watching episode 5, which was known as Gekko Dancing, otherwise known as Moonlight Dancing. That was the episode of Title 5 of Macross Telta. And we're here, as we always do, to give you our impressions and thoughts on the episode. Disclaimer, we will make mistakes. As many noticed, we made some last week. We are doing this raw. We don't have time to wait for no subs. And I'm not the only impatient one. And when I say I mean Gwyn Campbell. I'm one of the hosts here at Speaker Podcast Ger Talk. I'm here with my co-host,
Adrian Lozano, still recovering from his previous cold and jet lag. So,
and next to Adrian, we have our mysterious Venus,
Egan Liu, getting over a little bit of lack of sleep, but that's all.
And we had someone pop down from Osaka this week.
Yep, this is Howard Koi. I've been here on the podcast before.
And on the other side of Tokyo.
Yes, I'm also quite impatient. This is Renato, and do you want to hear my new song? It's I Don't Want No Subs. Subs is a thing that can get no love from me. I actually have a whole verse. I'll play you the full version sometime.
All right. I think, so Mike or Jason, if you're listening, we could do some guitar backing for Renato, and we'll put that together for future episode. Speaking of future episodes, as some people may have noticed, if you follow us on Twitter or on any other social media, there's been a bunch of Macross Delta and Macross related events over the last 2 weeks. Far too much to go into detail here. We will be following up on those in detail on a future podcast in the very near future. Why near future? It's Golden Week here in Japan. Nearly everyone has the next week off, and we intend to podcast the heck out of it. But for now, we're podcasting the heck out of episode 5 of Macross Delta. So, let's get into it, everyone.
Yay.
So, Mike, we open up and
can
we have...
anyone else sound more excited, please?
Exposition. Didn't we have this talk yesterday, Renato?
Yeah. Basically, like, shorter series have to have a lot more exposition. Look, that's why Macross 7 is the best.
Great, okay. No disagreements here, although we do know it's actually, you mistook...
There's one over there.
Yeah, well, you mistook the 7. It should have been 2, Renato, but apart from that...
3.
What this episode did, look, in a nutshell, before we get into details, episode 5 basically set us up for the beginning of the war that was declared at the end of the previous episode.
Elation, the war.
So it was a little bit slower in pace. There was a lot of info dumping, a lot of talking, a lot of talking heads.
A lot of dancing as well.
We'll get to that. But in a nutshell, you know, it was about, because Chaos is a PMC, because war had been declared, everyone had to sign up, because they, you know, basically signed up by New Year and Spacey, in this state of war. People like Hayate and Freya had to decide whether they were going to participate, because, you know, Hayate is looking for a motivation. Freya, of course, is technically, you know, one of the enemy, going by her race. So it was a slower episode overall, but I think it ultimately set things up for a potentially action-packed episode 6 and what is to come. So, we open up with a new galaxy map, a different angle for once on that that galaxy map, and it shows the immigration fleets, and it also shows the immigration fleet that landed on both Ragna and Windermere. Now, when we look at that fleet that landed on Windermere, Renato, did you notice anything in particular that was interesting about that?
I was microwaving my dinner at the time, so no, I didn't notice anything.
All right, thank you for that insight.
I watched it. I literally just finished watching it. That's why we were recording it at this time.
Right.
I just got home.
It was the Windermere colonization fleet appeared to be a Megaroad class. You get to see a Megaroad class ship front on.
Okay.
And again, it just seems to be one of these. We're getting all these throwbacks. Like, everything in the universe to date for Macross seems to be coming together in this series, even if it's just like a brief glimpse, you know?
Yeah.
So we get a lot of insight, if not in particular detail, into the Windermerians in this episode.
Yeah.
So what Royd is claiming is basically, he says that UN Spacey made first contact with Windermere 40 years ago. And that at first they approached them under the guise of friendship, and that it was all good, but that they were really, wolves in sheep's clothing, that the agreements they came to, the treaties they signed, ultimately, as far as Windermere was concerned, was like making a deal with the devil. And that 33 years after that, so 7 years prior to the series, Windermere had declared its independence. And this war is, as we heard last week, against New UN Spacey, or against humanity as children of the protoculture, as Royd called them. Now, we got a sense of the scale this time, because he's talking about, he wants New UN Spacey out of this sector of space, basically. Out of the Brisingle Star Cluster, which is the star cluster you see in the opening map, which is like off to the side. So this war is to get Nuns out, and they want to reclaim, Windermere wants to reclaim the freedom of their sky and their wind. Now we learn a little bit more about Windermere as well. Apparently, and Egan, feel free to back me up here, there is a fold distortion of some description surrounding Windermere, the planet.
Specifically a fold fault. It's a term that was used way back in Frontier, the first time we heard it. Is the same word that's used for earthquakes. And the reason why certain sectors, it's a bit tougher, if not impossible, to travel by folds.
It really, yeah. Tied, I, when I saw this on the screen, I was like, wow, this is just like Macross 30. Whereas the planet in Macross 30, Ouroboros, was surrounded by a fold aurora, which, depending on the length it lasted for, it came and went. But anything smaller than a Macross-class ship could not pass through it. Hence, the planet was rather isolated for large periods, extended periods of time. Similarly, and I'm going to presume a little bit here, the way Windermere has kept its isolation, its seclusion, its independence from both UN Spacey and Earth culture is probably because of this fold distortion.
And one of the things that can get through that fold distortions is fold quartz, something that came up in Macross Frontier and came to the forefront during Macross 30, which coincidentally happens about 7 years ago, same time frame that we're hearing Windermere is declaring their independence.
Right. Now, we hear, after getting a whole bunch of information dumped on us by the Windermereans, we switch to the Elysian and the discussion going on between Delta Platoon and Valkyrie, and they're talking about the current situation. So yeah, it looks like that Bodol, or however you pronounce the damn planet, surrendered with no resistance. And as to why, Mikumo points out that she could hear some kind of song, and that it was the song of a young boy, which means we know that Hines is a boy, despite the fact that it's been revealed the singing voice is a girl. And all of Valkyrie, it turned out, could hear this song, which seems to be different to Episode 1, when it was only Mikumo, Hayate, and Freya that could hear the song. However, no one outside of Valkyrie, except for Hayate, heard it this time.
And he credits.
And he says he didn't hear it so much as he felt it. And when he says he felt it, he's fingering that pendant around his neck, which I think we've all been thinking is fold quartz or something. So that could be a hint to something to come. And so they're trying to work out who this singer is. There's a legend on Windermere about the wind singer, or the singer of the wind.
Singer of the wind, yeah. Legendary singer of the wind.
Who apparently has this power. So that's, not gone into in any detail, but it's something that's also mentioned in the manga, which is something we'll bring up in a future podcast.
Also, the word that she used is kaze no utaite.
Yeah.
Which is kind of similar to Kaze no Michibikite, which is the name that they gave the priestesses, Michael type people in Macross Zero, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sarah being one of them.
There's also some speculation from Japanese folks about the word wind has been in the manga kind of equated with fold waves, another phrase that's popped up. So who knows if that means anything, especially with regards to the fold faults that we've been talking about.
Interesting. Yeah, so we switch back to to Windermere, and the information drops we had last episode are really coming to bear here. Like, we're hearing about the king being sick, and he has scars similar to Helmer, And so that looks like it's part of the aging process. And we get to hear some ages. Helma, who we know was Borg's teacher, is 33. So he's 3 years past his expiry date.
He looks much older because of that.
But he looks way older. You got to wonder how old the king is, whether royalty lives a little bit longer or not.
Lloyd, they mentioned his age, right?
It was the other guy, the T-Hawk-looking dude.
Well, the 30 years that they mentioned, I think that's just average life expectancy. It's just like here, average life expectancy is 76, but you have people that, because of their wealth, they can afford better medical care, they can live to past 100.
Well,
tell me no.
The thing is, the reaction we got to it last episode seemed that it was more or less a death sentence. It wasn't something that was very mutable. And the way Freya's treated by her own culture in the manga as well, like, they refer to her as middle-aged. Mm-hmm. Because at 14, if you don't have a husband yet, it's like, what are you doing with your life? She also doesn't control her rune, which is something Bo gets pulled up for. Apparently when you're an adult, your rune is not supposed to act of its own accord based on your feelings. So in that respect, Freya is a little childish. So now that we're in a state of war, Chaos needs to get everyone to sign a contract to sign up for war, basically. Because as a PMC, they're signing up with you and Spacey. And so they have a meeting where everyone's deciding whether they want to join. And everyone joins, of course. And all the mechanics are really happy that Machina's joining. They're like, woo! And when it comes to Freya and Hayata, you know, being the two newest recruits, with Freya, there's a problem that already head office and the internet are spreading rumors that she could be an enemy spy. So she has to give some thought about whether she wants to go ahead and sign up for this. In the meantime, we see Machina and Reyna, they're doing their mechanical thing, and they're updating the multi-drones. They're saying upgrading their shield capacity and power. So, again, people are getting ready for war here. Kaname also says something offhand about they need to stabilize Freya's abilities, because they're going to be needed. So, again, we're getting ready for war. I don't know if we mentioned last week how Machina does the, you know, she calls Reina Rei Rei, and she starts calling everyone. She does it for everyone, right? She
Haya Haya.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
She used it on Mirage this time, and that's Mira Mira. And I was just like, wow, I thought that only applied to people mostly. Well, she did for Hayate, I guess she'd do it for Mirage. It just kind of caught me off guard. I was chuckling.
Wonder what she calls the captain.
Oh, yeah. John John. So they're in. They're in Ragun Yan Yan, and the media invades, trying to get a scoop on Freya, whether or not she's a spy. Hayata grabs her and escapes to the beach outside, which, you know, is just outside the balcony, and apparently the mass media is allergic to sand because they don't follow them out there. And they're talking on the beach when Mirage comes down, and, you know, she tries to kind of bring up this conversation with Freya by mentioning that her own grandparents were, you know, the first ever interspecies couple, and that, you know, they're quite well known for being a bridge between two cultures, and we get to see some art of Max and Miria. So whether that's the only time we hear them, well, who knows, but they've been directly referred to, and even Hayat has heard of them.
Yeah, yeah, just to make sure, we didn't hear them, we heard about them.
Right.
They're not in the show.
Yeah, not yet. No, I mean, we can hope.
Not their voices, anyway. no, but there's some tangent art there. That was pretty cool.
Push the play button so I know what's going on.
But, yeah, we just got playing in the background. So, at this point, Hayate notes, and this for Hayate, this is really quite observant, that Freya's rune has not been shining at all this time, so that she's obviously not herself, she's obviously down. So he takes her on a joyride in his 31, which, you know, is a throwback to you know, Hikaru and Mine, you know, in the original. So except the difference to the original Macross here is that instead of being caught by Zentradi, they're caught by Messer, who locks onto them with a missile to make them return to base. But it was a good joyride. You're talking about Dancing Valkyries, Renato. What do you think of their joyride?
Fantastic, brilliant, as usual. I love it. More of this, please. Let just that be the show. dancing robots all the time, always.
It was...
I don't need the exposition. I need to know what's happening.
I thought it was well done, and the... Freya was kind of dancing in the cockpit, wasn't she, Adrian?
Oh, yeah. Yep. This, I mean, you liked it. It was fine. I didn't have a problem with it. No, it's basically a commercial for the single. Because she sings a song.
And, yeah, she sings the ending song.
Yeah, and everyone's wondering...
Which we're going to hear in 5 minutes, literally, anyway.
Obviously, everyone's wondering if they're going to get captured by aliens or something like that.
Yeah, no, I wasn't.
That's what I was thinking.
I wanted it to get confused.
Also, you forgot to mention the cat seals. The Umineko.
Oh, yeah, Garfield appears again.
Is it Garfield, Adrian?
No, it's not Garfield.
What do you mean?
It's Heathcliff. Garfield is too lazy to steal anything. He eats lasagna. He doesn't eat fish.
Where are you?
Blah, Heathcliff blah, blah, is famous blah, 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 for stealing all the fish and is mischievous.
Well, the difference in this episode was they actually call a truce. Hayate is looking at the sea and just enjoying the sea air, and Heathcliff comes over and also enjoys it, and they decide not to have it out right there. Yeah. They both
just
like
call
the
him
sea.
Heathfield. How about that?
Garcliff?
Garcliff.
I'm going to pull this back in here. So in that scene where they're just before doing the dancing, where Freya does start singing, if you notice, she's actually doing the Black Bunny, White Bunny, Cheryl Gnome dance from the first Frontier movie, Inside the Cockpit.
I thought she was doing the monkey.
No,
King Gainer.
King Fukuyama.
King Gainer.
Well, that'd just be the Fukuyama.
Yeah.
That's Fukuyama, yeah.
But I think it was the show
basically
dance.
Basically, it's a little... callback to the,
I did not notice that.
First
well
Frontier
done.
Movie. Because everyone kind of would make fun of how she would do her little arm dance, I remember. It was just like an odd animated style. But they did it in here. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah, no, I like the arm dance.
It was really fluid, really well animated. Keeping up the really good 2D animation in the show. Although, granted, there's a lot of exposition this episode, so I don't think the animation was as demanding. Earlier on in the episode, they probably...
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, saved it all up for the dance.
Yeah.
So, to get back on point then, Mesa commands them back to base. They go back to base. Mesa's angry at Hayate for going out without permission, of course, and using a Valkyrie for personal use. Very similar to previous Macrosses. But what's interesting is he says, you can't fly as you like because we're now in a state of war. And Hayato's obviously really unhappy that he's getting chewed out. This goes against his character of this free spirit. But then he thinks for a moment, he's like, all right, I can't fly as I want to because we're in a state of war. So I won't leave Delta Platoon. I'll stay with Delta Platoon so I can end the war, get my sky back, Shades of Alto, and fly as I like. So that's his motivation. He's on board. Similarly, while Freya was in the cockpit, was in the Valkyrie with him, Hayate said to her that when you're at your best when you're singing, you love singing, you should keep on singing. So she decides, despite these false claims of being a spy, false as far as we know, who knows what could happen, but she's going to stay with Valkyrie.
She's a false songstress.
So
that should have been,
and that's pretty much where the episode ends. So they've again both been set up, much like at the end of episode 2, for where they need to be for the story to progress. Now, all right, that's the story in a nutshell. I'm going to open it up to everyone. Egan, I think you picked a couple of things out.
One of the cool things that appeared in this episode is we see a new fighter design. We haven't seen what it's called. We don't know if it's even transformable. Although this being Macross, it probably does. But it's not the first time we've seen something similar to that. We can talk about this more later, but we know from the past that Kawamori created this design story called Aerial Knights Chronicles, which became Escaflowne, and had very similar designs to the F-104 Starfighter in real life that became the Rapier LV-7 Excalibur in what would become Escaflowne. We know Excalibur became the name of the VF... 19, mm-hmm. And now we see another kind of a route from Escaflowne into the Macross Delta.
And in what context do we see this new design?
this new design is one of the... it was a fighter we see in the background, presumably piloted by the king of Windermere when he was serving at the same time as Johnson,
mm-hmm.
7 years ago. So we've got a little bit of background, and we got a sense of...
And you see how much he's aged in 7 years as well.
It's, that's true.
For a Windermerean, he's become like the old RPG king on his deathbed.
Yeah.
He looked like a hotshot pilot, pretty much. Slightly mature, but still quite young in those pictures from 7 years ago.
That's right. If a dog lives 1 year for every 7 human years... 3.5-ish, I guess, would be how much faster a Windermere lives compared to a human.
Right. So, you know, pure speculation here, but I wonder if this fault, this fold distortion around the planet doesn't have something to do with the lifespan, whether time's passing quicker or something, because it's not something we've come across on any other planet to date. And the fact that it's got this fold distortion just seems really odd. And they mention ruins, and again, throwing back to Macross 30, there were ruins on Ouroboros that were causing this fold aurora around the planet. Could we be seeing something similar here? You know, or do they know people have played Macross 30, or are they presuming no one's played Macross 30 and among
and
the
they're advertising
viewers,
it now?
And, well, they're just, you know, basically reusing a lot of elements.
Hence why we're getting these info dumps here and there to explain what fold faults are, what they cause to a planet. That might be why.
Maybe. But so, Howard, apart from sea cats, did anything jump to your attention? You've watched, just to bring everyone up to date, you're up to speed on all the episodes.
Yeah. One of the things that we were warned about by producer Karamori would there that there would be a big tonal shift in episode 5, and so far it doesn't seem that big of a shift. So far, we still get a lot of cutesy anime stuff and sparkles around people.
Well, this was the episode that had the most political stuff in it, at least in the first 5 minutes, which is what all the naysayers that don't want idle stuff shoved down their throats want more of, I believe, isn't it?
Right. So far, this still seems to be setting up a possibly grim, gritty war.
Yeah.
Right. With sparkly runes. Mm-hmm. Did anyone notice we got less new Freya expressions? This was the least expressive Freya. Well, because she was down the dumps most of the episodes. Yeah. So.
Well, taking consideration that she just decided to go against her own race.
It's a good point. It's a good.
Well, that, yeah, I mean that's a plot point, isn't it? The fact that she's trying. That I mean that's what I meant last week. That she's trying hard to put on a brave face and act Genki, but it's not really working anymore, and even Hayate starts to notice that, yeah, she is just putting on an act.
And the point was driven home with a little scene I don't think you mentioned yet, while they were at Chuck's restaurant, and they got mobbed by a crowd of about 30 paparazzi, and they were fielding questions about whether Freya was a traitor or all that, and that kind of rattled her.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it did. That's a good point.
I think that's one cool thing that they did when we were back on Windermere. They pointed out even the people there, the king didn't, oh, sorry, not the king, the leader didn't know that she was part of Valkyrie, that there was a Windermerean within Valkyrie. So that hints, at least for the Arianites, they don't think that she's a spy.
Right. So, well, they think she's a traitor.
But not a spy.
Necessarily a spy.
So at least we've got that context that we know that she's not, you know, a spy in clothing. Even though the rest of the people don't know that.
Also, I want to point out that Royd's glasses collection really is magnificent. And I think, was this the first time we saw the full... Because they met the king, and after they meet the king, we see Keith in his full get-up, his full royal get-up. I think previously we've seen them in their equivalent of flight suits. I think it's the first time we've seen them with the King of Fighters Krauser kind of shoulder pads and neck brace collar. That's going to be fun for cosplayers to try to pull off. That outfit's pretty intricate. Yeah.
Challenge accepted is what everybody's saying.
Yeah, probably.
I think it was Nobuteru Yuki who talked about why the enemy designs are always more intricate.
Because of Yamato.
Because of Yamato. And because they don't move less. They don't have to be on the screen much. So they can put all the detail they want on the enemy character designs. So the animators don't have to care about that.
Well, like them. Here, the capes are blowing in the wind.
Yeah.
So they got those big, fancy capes that they have to animate, yeah. Along with the feathers and stuff.
Also, everything else doesn't have to move.
Also, in this scene, this is the first time since Virgin Road we get an actual knife fight.
That's right, Bogue.
Better animated, thankfully.
And at first, you're like, what's going on? But then that whole Bogue and Hellman, teacher-student relationship is still there. I think it's fairly obvious that Hellman's going to die. I mean, he's like Balgus in Escafone, pretty much.
Well, you know this is Fujoshi bait. Like, they're really going for the older guy kind of thing?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought when I was watching.
The doujin between them are being written as we speak.
Yeah.
We've got the glasses guy, we've got the older guy, we've got twins. No, not twins, we've got the brothers in it. Oh, yeah, we do have...
Yeah, twins.
One does a little something for everyone, yeah.
Pretty much. Well, for all the ladies, at least.
And the same could be true for the Valkyrie, for the... Yeah.
Well, we already had something here for the guys.
Well, we'll get into that next.
Talk about.
No, we'll get into the doujin next podcast. But Adrian, I mean, it was a fairly info dump heavy episode. But did anything jump out to you apart from the bunny dance?
Just the white bunny, black bunny dancing. The illustrations of the fighters, the Maximiria stuff that popped out. Yeah, it was a slow-paced episode, but, it's more or less still getting to know this side of the team. Mm. You know, the Windermerians, they're still a mystery, so...
Right.
I'm waiting for them to get a full episode. Like, they're eventually gotta get a full episode.
Right.
I did like we got a scene of regular Windermerians. When they come in, they were cheering on the Aerial Knights when they came back from the battle. So, on their side, they're... It sounds like they're showing that the populace of Windermere are supporting the regime.
And they're not really; they don't seem very oppressed or unhappy.
Yeah. Well, not
they
anymore.
They seem to be actually liking their rulers.
And I guess we should point out that when the episode opens, it starts off with the end of this, recapping this declaration of war, a very brief history of space immigration in the sector. But then we go to Windermere. And it's like, well, wait, what happened immediately after that declaration? Everyone just seems to have turned around and gone home. Like, oh, war, all right, let's go get ready. Like, the fight just seems... We don't know what happened to the crowd at the concert or anything. It just... And in that sense, this is still kind of cutting back and forth really quickly.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen, like, how they, broke away and detached and... Disengaged, I should say, from combat, because that was a bit odd.
Wait, they did say that, right? Like, at the end of the episode, they were told to pull back, right?
They were, but you see them flying, they're all hovering there in Batroid mode. The declaration's given. Well, what happens then?
Yeah. But it's almost like the installments in Zero they're missing. Macross Zero. All of a sudden, they're on the island, and then all of a sudden, they're on a helicopter.
That was much, much worse, though.
Yes,
true,
we know that.
True.
You can actually see it on the screen that everything was rushed.
Yeah.
Like, it was even drawn rushed and edited rushed.
So
don't waste moments here in this series. It's been very plotted. Every scene seems to have a point. There's no wasted screen time so far.
Oh, speaking of product branding, I liked how they threw in the current ramen chips in the episode that the... What do they call over there?
Oh, the baby star noodles? Is that?
Yeah. Because remember they were eating them in the beginning?
Were they actually the baby star noodles? I didn't check. They looked very similar. I thought they were just kind of...
Probably not the exact same branding, but obviously it's the same bag they're eating in. Oh, these are so good. But then they're selling that kind of a product right now.
No, I thought they were... I don't know. I don't have the episode on me right now. But I thought they were like fried jellyfish or fried something.
Something chips. I did catch the very end.
I think I know, Adrian. You probably mean like the packet Hoodlights. They were holding look very similar in design, I guess.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah. And we've had too many of those damn noodle stacks already, and they're not even officially available yet. So
that's, although I did find it kind of weird that we open up on the Valkyria side with that scene. Everyone is happily munching snacks.
Right, how did everyone get home?
After, especially, like, and again, this might be Freya putting on a strong face, or it might just be, like, weirdly written. But she's the happiest out of the bunch. She's like, oh yeah, goli goli, it's really oishi.
Yeah, I'd say she's probably putting on a happy face.
I know.
Your hometown is...
Well, isn't that the point earlier about her rune not glowing, is that she's artificially putting on a happy face?
Yeah, that was my point last week. But it's kind of weird.
And the biggest crime of this episode is the fact that we're so far into the future, they still have hunkos in use. And
you explain what a hunko is?
It is the biggest pain in the rear of living in Japan, because it's one of the first things you have to get to do anything.
We better explain what hunko are.
It's the family seal, or what we would say is a stamp with your name on it.
It's the equivalent of a signature. It's a chop.
Well, yeah.
There's a futuristic-looking one, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but we don't need to give the Japanese government ideas on how to keep this idea in play to make our lives miserable 60 years from now.
And it was way bigger than current hunko as well. It was this giant Rainer digital stamp of doom.
So,
and you know that's going to be like an Ichiban Kuji prize, so you can stamp every character's hunko.
Yeah.
But so Renato,
and there'll be a train rally where you have to go to every station and collect every character's hunko.
Good call.
Renato, any final thoughts on the episode? We'll wrap this up.
Not really.
You're the one telling us to be more enthusiastic.
Yeah, I know. I ran out of steam.
I mean, I think the enthusiasm would probably come from the Valkyrie scene, and it was really. I mean, they got the physics down pretty good, and I admit, still, I think the transformations are a little fast. Like, when he goes from free fall to pulling the legs in, hitting the thrusters, and then just missing the water. It's all very fast, but, you know, it went well, and I think it really created a good bond between Hayate and Freya. Like, well, continued the bond we've seen forming. Really do play off each other really well. Look, I haven't seen a couple play off each other this well in anime, period, since probably Frontier, because by the end of Frontier, I really liked the Alto-Cheryl relationship, especially in the movies, but because they came to this understanding of, yes, she's a show pony, yes, she's going to have this fake arrogance, but, you know, she is very caring underneath, and they learned to live with each other's egos, I guess, and they became like that star couple in high school, you know, the prom queen and the football quarterback who looked like they could do no wrong. This is a different type of couple, but I'm still feeling a good chemistry between them. And you got to wonder what they're building it up to, since they seem to have this strong rapport this early in the series.
They did have a good love triangle scene in the middle.
On the beach?
Yes. So because you mentioned that Mirage was talking about Max and Miria. But that, of course, leads to a huge argument between Hayate and Mirage about, oh, you want to say that, you know, your grandparents are so great and they're ace pilots and so you're better than us. And she's like, no, that's not what I'm trying to say, and blah, blah, blah. And Frey's in the corner there laughing.
With that kimochi waru laugh, right?
Yeah.
We went to an event where they had the voice actress Suzuki. She laughs like that in real life.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Scary, though.
We'll get to that in the next podcast. But, yeah, look, speaking of which, I think we might as well wrap this up. It was a very information-packed episode, but and it was great seeing illustrations of Max and Milia pop up and getting things in position and learning a little bit more about the Windmerians, finally. The only final point I'll throw in is you're mentioning how when they came back from the declaration of war, the general village people seem to support them. And that's partially, you see a little bit more of that in the manga as well, that's ongoing, which we'll talk about later on. But yeah, it does seem on Windermere's side, no one has any problem with what royalty is doing, and it is very much a village life. You see crates of those apples and stuff. So
what does it look like? What's going on next week? So,
Egan, next week's episode, what do we have in store for us?
It says Ketsudan Overloaders, the title, Decisive Overload. I guess the closest thing we heard in the past for Macross is a barrier overload. It's probably what the reference could or could not be. We'll find out.
And we got a little bit more, like a whole second and a half to 2 seconds more in the preview for next episode. And it looks like there's going to be some action.
In an asteroid field.
With something sitting, what was that, 31 that we could barely see?
I would say it's Mizzer, but it looks like he has some kind of new kind of pack on there. So
sound boosters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We can only hope.
So, that makes sense, because they're trying to get the music to him.
Oh, yeah.
That could work.
Yeah.
So maybe he's trying to jam it. Who knows?
Yeah, so how's Valkyrie going to jump out of the cockpits in the middle of space? That would be fun to see.
Magical girls.
And ram into an asteroid.
And so, look, on that note, if anyone wants to leave any feedback on the cast, I urge you to do so. If anyone has any questions or corrections, although I'm sure Mike will get back to us with any corrections next week, drop us a line either via Twitter or via any of the Facebook groups you can find us on, or at speakerpod@gmail.com.
Yeah. And where can they find you at?
I'm on Twitter. You just look for me as Gwyn Campbell on Twitter.
I go under Giant Robo at Twitter. You can find me there.
Howard, are you anywhere, or are you mysterious like Egan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much in the Egan crew.
So, Egan, you're the mysterious Venus, and Howard, you can be the mysterious Jupiter, I guess. You have to wear a green Sailor Scout outfit next week.
Ooh, sounds fun.
All right. And on that note, this is the episode, the Macross Delta episode 5 discussion. Go walk, go talk for Speaker Podcast. Folding up.